Again, welcome to everyone. For those who don't know all of us, I think we know most of you. I'm Devrishi, this is Bharat, and this is Devi. And we're here today to talk about the path of Kriya Yoga. These teachings that we have been given by our masters, by God, we have been given so much. We have all these books and writings and different approaches to the spiritual path. Because I tend to be a simplistic-minded person, I like to simplify it sometimes just to get back to the basics. And I just want to look at some of the things that we've talked about this week from that perspective of just going back to the most important things that we have here. One of them, as one of our speakers or more of them talked about, is to understand and always remember the goal. We're made in the image of God, which Yogananda described as our true nature, of Sat Chit Ananda, ever existing, ever conscious, ever new, divine bliss. And Devi and others talked about we have this map of how to get there, of how to get to the goal, the destination of Sat Chit Ananda. If someone calls the expanding light, and this is the part that gets a little bit complicated because everyone is starting in a different place. Someone calls the expanding light and they ask, how do I get to Ananda? And they're really asking, how do I get to Sat Chit Ananda? Tell me how to get there. And depending on where the person is coming from, it can be a little bit different. The person maybe is coming from being a very overly intellectual person. And so they need to take the route more of balancing that with devotion and divine joy. Or maybe the person is very devotional, but they don't have much energy, or they're lazy, or they have some qualities that they work on. And so their route to get to divine joy is a little bit different, even though all those roads end in the same destination. But luckily, we have some incredible roadmaps. These teachings that we've been given, in a sense, are the roadmap on how to get home. I would really like to recommend one particularly that's sort of a universal roadmap, which is The Art and Science of Raja Yoga by Swami Kriyananda, which really takes these teachings of Raja Yoga and presents them in the most clear, complete and balanced way. And even those who haven't read it in many years, I know for many of us at Ananda, we've lived here for many years, and maybe we haven't picked that book up in 5, 10, 15 years. Pick it up again and look at it and carry that around with you as a roadmap. So we have the destination, we have the map. Now we need a vehicle to travel that road. Now, the really rich kids growing up, the vehicle that they got when they became old enough was a really, if they were lucky, was a really fancy sports car. Well, for us, we're very lucky because our parents are the super rich. They not only own the entire universe, they are the entire universe. And Yogananda, the path that he gave to us and the vehicle that he gave to us, he said, and he called it, the jet airplane route to God. And that's the vehicle. He said Kriya Yoga is the jet airplane path to God because it's the quickest, the most powerful. That's the vehicle we've been given. And we've seen the effectiveness and the truth of this over the many years. Now, if we were just given a sports car, we could probably drive it ourselves and probably crash it by the time we were 20. Jet airplane, we don't know how to drive it. And so Yogananda also said something else. And this is actually the fourth part of this very overly simplistic view of the spiritual path. And perhaps, and surely the most important one, he said that Kriya Yoga is the jet airplane route to God. He said, and it is piloted by the guru. And that's really the key to the spiritual path. I am really surprised. I get a lot of inquiries about Kriya Yoga, and there's a sort of a recurring pattern. Occasionally someone calls up, very eager to learn Kriya, very interested. They've heard about Kriya. They know that Ananda teaches a real effective and true approach to Kriya Yoga. And I encourage them really greatly in pursuing it and how it really works. And then they ask, well, how do you get there? How do you learn Kriya? And so I talk about our teachings and the Ananda course. And one of the steps along the way to learning Kriya Yoga is discipleship to our line of gurus. And every once in a while, and this just happened a couple weeks ago, the person stops at that point and said, I don't want a guru, I just want the technique. And so I explained that, well, I don't get into the pilot and all that kind of stuff, I said, but I do explain, because usually they've read the autobiography of a yogi and explained that, do you remember an autobiography of a yogi, how Lahiri Mahashai learned Kriya Yoga? It was through initiation, it was through discipleship to Babaji, and that you can't separate these two. Kriya Yoga as a technique is just a technique. There's many different breathing exercises and practices in yoga, but it's as a technique alone, it's very effective and powerful. But when the pilot of the guru guides us and carries us along this path, the technique of Kriya is extraordinarily powerful. When our efforts wane, when we get lost, think of the path in this way, of those four points: the goal, the map, the vehicle, and the pilot. When our efforts wane, pick up the map. If you get lost, have the map with you all the time. Have the art and science of Raja Yoga. Or call a Kriyaban friend and don't hesitate to say, I'm lost. Somehow I took a wrong turn here and I got into attachment or worldliness or desire. Or use the intercom and call the pilot of the plane and ask him, help me, I'm lost. If your efforts wane and your enthusiasm goes down a little bit, pull out the travel brochure for Club Satchitananda that shows the goal of divine joy and bliss. You know, Master actually recommended doing that in his own way, pulling out that brochure every day, he said. He said, in my favorite version of that brochure, he said, read the poem Samadhi every day, memorize it. And one of the reasons is that it really describes the goal of divine bliss. From joy I came, for joy I live, in sacred joy I melt. And so that whole poem really holds before us the divine goal. And it's a constant reminder of where we're going. And it encourages us and inspires us. And even just meditating on the goal starts to magnetize it and starts to draw us towards the goal. Now, over time, we tend to complicate things away from this very simple view of it. And how we usually and typically complicate it is through our karma. And it's not the karma so much, but that we identify so much with it. And I hear people say, well, I can't do these teachings because, and you can fill in the blank so many times with, because of my health, or because of this relationship, or because of this karma, or this or that. And there's a lot of different reasons that complicate it very, very much. Master was very strong about this. He actually said, get beyond this thought that your karma is going to have anything to do with it. He said, and I'll read it because his words are so much more powerful the way he says it. He said to a struggling disciple, your job for now is to get to God. Don't worry about all the karma you will still have to complete. Let God worry about that. First, destroy in yourself the source of karmic involvement. That source is your attachment to the ego. Once the ego is merged in him, then any actions you perform will no longer revert to yourself. Your actions will be like writing on water. They will leave no trace in the mind. In severing yourself from egoic involvement in any action that you perform, you will have cut the Gordian knot of delusion. This is the state of the Jivanmukta, one who is free inside, even while living in this world. Being inwardly free, nothing he does can ever affect him again. So don't worry about your karma. We all have that karma. Let God worry about the karma. Our job is to focus on the spiritual path, getting in touch with the pilot. Don't be bashful about running up to the cabin and sitting with him. There's a lot of room in that cabin. Even talking to your fellow passengers, you know, the person sitting next to you here in this room. All these things can help us get us back on track. And if we focus on the goal, the path, our practices, and the guru, we will inexorably get closer and closer to divine freedom. And God will take care of our karma, and it will come out over time and just fall away from us just very, very naturally. I had an experience about this some years ago that really was a good sort of analogy of how karma just naturally works itself out. And it can take time, but it naturally comes out, and it's not something that is who and what we are. We tend to identify with that karma. We look in the mirror and you see yourself as either someone who tends to get angry, or you're emotional, or you're unwell, or this or that, and that's just karma. That's not really who and what we are. In a way, that karma is like the story I'm about to tell. Many years ago, it was about 20 years ago, I was starting to get a pain in the bottom of my foot. And it was a very sharp pain, like there was something inside my foot, like some foreign object was causing that. And I remembered I'd stepped on a nail about a year before. So I went to the doctor, and he did an x-ray. And he said with his x-ray, you should have even seen a piece of dirt or something that was big enough. And he said, nothing showed up. And then so I could still feel it. So he cut into the foot and kind of poked around, couldn't find anything. And so there was nothing to be done. So over the years, this thing would come and go. And it was never really painful or debilitating, but it was very annoying. You'd be running, jogging, and all of a sudden it would be like you just stepped on a tack or something. There was something in there. And I knew something was still there, but there was nothing that could really be done about it. Finally, about 15 years later, it was getting worse and worse. And I got a callus on the bottom of my foot, and I finally went back to the doctor, and you know, thankfully we have a wonderful doctor, Dr. Peter here, and he looked at it and he thought maybe there was a virus that was in there because it looked something like that. And the treatment was to freeze it with liquid nitrogen, which is super cold, and it draws this out over time, over several treatments. And interestingly, it's the doctor's intuition where the diagnosis doesn't have to be correct, but the treatment, if it's correct, then you're going in the right direction. And that was the case. One day I was soaking in the tub and I looked at the bottom of my foot, and there was a real shiny thing sticking out of the bottom of my foot, and I pushed and poked, and out popped a piece of glass, and I measured it. It was about a quarter inch long, and it was very, very thin, so it was a very sharp shard of glass that for 15 years, every time I stepped, every time I walked, it was moving around in there, and every once in a while it would move to the wrong spot and poke me, and then it finally came out, and luckily, I don't over-identify with my foot and with an annoying pain. And so it was a good example of how we should treat are the karmas that we have. And again, don't feel sorry for me. It was never a problem. It was just more annoying. But it was a foreign object that wasn't me. It was just in there from some past action I had done. And so it was there. And just over time, through the practice of Kriya Yoga, through running, maybe pushing it around, finally, it just worked itself out and came out. And then it was gone forever. And this is how karma works. Our job isn't to worry overly and identify about, oh, my foot, and oh, what's the problem, and this is keeping me from meditating or doing this or that. Just go through your life, practice your practices, and this karma, God will take care of it. Some of it will come out, and it's, you know, a little bit like, you know, sometimes it can be unpleasant. You know, we were working, practicing Kriya Yoga, and some past attitude or habit comes up, and you see it, and it's sort of like turning on the light sometimes, if you ever stayed where there was cockroaches. You turn on the light, and they suddenly start scurrying away. But that's really, in a sense, how Kriya Yoga, the grace of God, the Guru, just working on that and not worrying about the karma, it all just eventually goes away from the light. And this is what Kriya Yoga really does so effectively. It works with bringing light and divine grace, divine joy and inspiration up and down through our astral spine where these seeds of karma are located. And over time, all these seeds of karma just work their way out. Swami Kriyananda once said, when you see something in you that's coming out, he said, rather than being sort of dismayed that you're seeing this quality in you that you didn't know you had, he said, actually clap your hands and say, wonderful, now I can work on getting this out. And usually for a Kriya Yogi, it's typically on its way out when you first start to notice it. Just like that piece of glass was starting to get more painful at the very end when it was finally on its way of working itself out. So don't overcomplicate it by looking at your karma and your limitations, which really is what our karma is. Just see all of these things as a foreign object that's not who and what you are. Identify with the light, practice these teachings, tune into the grace of the Guru, see this light everywhere and live in that light, and let God take care of the rest. Our job is just to get to God. It's very, very, very simple. And these teachings really are very simple. Just keep going back to the light. Just keep going back to God over and over and over again. There's wonderful ways that you can do this in your daily life also, because we all have jobs. We all have a daily life. We do things and we have routines and patterns. But really use these as an opportunity also to go to the light. You know, something that Jyotish alluded to last night at the second Kriya initiation, in which really with all of our practices and techniques I've seen to be true, which is that don't get too over-worrying about the results of meditation. You'll find that if you concentrate at the spiritual eye, offer yourself to God there, even if you don't see the light that is who and what we are there, just that effort of looking for the light will uplift your consciousness. Same with hearing the sounds with the Om technique. Just the effort of tuning into God, listening for God, looking for God. Even if we don't see or hear God, our consciousness is uplifted and we're brought closer to God. Don't worry about the karma that's limiting us and how long it's going to take. Our only job is just to keep going in that direction towards the light. Marie and I have a wonderful sort of a game that we do because we enjoy walking and the exercise and walking around here. And when you've walked for 30 or 40 years in these hills, you don't see anything really particularly new. But we always have an adventure when we walk. And we never go for just a walk. It's always an expedition, even if it's just a very short walk. And it's not even an expedition. It's what Christopher Robin calls an expotition. And we take this very humdrum. We're very prone to exaggeration in our household, if you haven't noticed. But you take a very humdrum, thing that you do every day and make it into a seeking of God. And whenever we go out, we're always looking for God in some way. And we ask each other, what are we going to see today? Because we're always looking. And we always see something that's God reminding. We'll see, acorn woodpeckers laughing at us the way these birds do around here. We'll see a flock of bluebirds glistening in the sun, or the deer, or even something just very little that just is very God reminding. Maria told this beautiful story about the Indian squirrel that has the stripes on its back. And it got these stripes because the squirrel helped Lord Rama win this great battle. And so afterwards, Lord Rama stroked the back of the squirrel, and where he touched the squirrel with his fingers, has these white stripes. And it's possible that the Indian squirrel is more spiritual than the American cousin squirrel. But really, the other way to look at this story is that in India, the simple squirrel is God reminding. They see the squirrel and they think, that's the creature that was touched by the Lord of the universe and stroked in the back, and those white stripes remind me of God and of God as Lord Rama. And so you see that in India with other animals. Monkeys are not just monkeys. They're part of Hanuman's army, and elephants, they're Ganesha and the overcomer and the Lord of obstacles. And so if you're walking in nature, see things this way. Look for God everywhere. And if you live in a city, you can also do this. You can see it in the people. Look for God in the people. Look for the light. You'll find over time that if you make it a habit of always looking for God, looking for the light, listening for God speaking to you, even when you don't see God or hear God, you'll be uplifted and you will, I can guarantee it, be brought closer to God. And so a big part of our job is just to live our lives that way. Practice these teachings. Look for God everywhere. Look for inspiration. Even when you're not getting results with these practices, know that every spiritual effort that we make, just to say a prayer, to look for the light, to try to renounce our ego, to tune into the guru, to listen to the sounds, every effort we make is bringing us inexorably closer and closer to God. Sometimes when we get on the spiritual path, we have this image that when we get freedom, we're going to be flying across the finish line with our hair flying and the song from Chariots of Fire playing in the background. And we've seen the reality, and Swami Kriyananda is a good example. As he gets closer to freedom and perhaps he's crossed the finish line, the wheels are falling off. and he has two artificial hips and hearing aids and a heart valve and all these replacement parts. I read it's a scientific theory or analogy, but it was about this idea called George Washington's axe, which is that someone was selling the axe that had originally belonged to George Washington, and the ad said, George Washington's original axe, in good condition, because the handle has been replaced twice and the head has been replaced three times. And if you know that an axe only has a handle and a head, I think Swami Kriyananda is George Washington's axe in some ways. But it's really, we don't get across the line with our own effort going across. That's part of the way we get across. But it's so beautiful at Kriya ceremonies over the years. I attend very many because I work with the Kriya Sangha. And as our people work out karma and seemingly more and more and get closer to the finish line, it's so inspiring sometimes to see people come up for the blessing at the Kriya, and they can barely stumble up there sometimes. I've seen people have to get helped up just this little step here. When they're standing for the blessing, someone has to hold them to keep them from falling over. And really, that's how we get across. That's how we find freedom, is whatever we're going through, let God worry about that karma. Our job is to keep going towards the light. If we're stumbling towards the light, if we're crawling towards the light, you will find that inevitably, if you do it with God, with the Guru, with our fellow devotees, that as you're getting there, you'll find a hand, an arm lifting you up the step, carrying you across the finish line. And really, we get across that final freedom only with the help of the Guru. We don't get it running across with our own steam and raising our hand and shouting. We do it with the help of the Guru. Even Yogananda, as an example to all of us, when he received the state of samadhi, of superconsciousness, he was meditating very restlessly, and Sri Yukteswar called him down and said, okay, now it's time, and he tapped him on the chest, and he went into samadhi. And it came through the grace and the blessings of the Guru, finally, in the end, helping him across. His own effort was also there, but his own effort by itself was getting him to a very restless meditation. I like to ask people, has this ever happened to anybody else here? And really, that's our job. Don't worry if it's a restless meditation. Put out the effort, tune into the Guru, and you will inevitably reach the goal. Master said that divine freedom, all the things that we're talking about, this divine goal, comes, as he put it, with divine inevitability to the sincere devotee. And so take these teachings, take these practices, take this renewed inspiration to keep getting up, keep going towards the light, keep serving God, keep serving the Guru, do all the things that we've been talking about this weekend and this last week, and you will inevitably get there. Let God worry about your karma. Let's just worry about going into the light, practicing Kriya Yoga, and doing our own best to find freedom, and ask the Guru and God for their help as we go along, and you will get there. So blessings to everyone.